science isn't just, you know, like a experimental apparatus and results. Science also has to do with polls and asking questions and you know, getting data in that manner. You know, one piece of data is just an anecdote, but a million pieces of data that all line up or that add up to something beyond a statistical significance, then that's scientific as well, and that's the kind of stuff that needs to be done to get to these metaphysical questions, because they're not the kind of things that are reproducible easily, are they?
How much does the brain have to do with this, Jim? I mean, what does the brain concoct that could cross those lines?
The way I look at it, George, and I certainly don't have the answer. This is just my guess at how it all works, is that the brain is kind of like a cache. If you're familiar with your computer has caches, which are they're very fast memory devices that store the things that you most frequently use. So it makes the computer seem to run faster rather than have to go to the disk all the time for data. It stores it in memory. And Google, for example, they cache their entire index. That's why Google was so fast, and that's why they became the number one search engine, is because they put their index in hardware. It was very, very fast to access.
Very smart to do, wasn't it?
It was very smart to do. And I think the brain may be the same way. Like, I think there's probably something out there, you know, some people call it the Akashic record. We don't know what the mechanism is that stores data, but the mere fact that people can tap into data that's beyond what's in their brain, and this has been proven over and over. I mean, there are people who can be hypnotized to regress to a point where they can speak some old language, like Old Norse or something like that. And you know, it's unexplainable because they never learned it. It's not in their brain function, but they have gone out of the cache and they've gone out to some other mechanism, to this other repository of data to get this. And that's, you know, that's another proof of the fact that there's something beyond consciousness or beyond the brain in terms of consciousness.
Could you call it our divine intelligence, the creator?
Yeah, I think you know that's definitely along the right lines. I mean, whether it's one creator or multiple creators, you know, if we're in a programmed reality, which again, the evidence is just kind of overwhelming for, somebody wrote the program and it wasn't us because we're not capable of doing that yet. We do have petaflop computers that have a quadrillion floating point operations per second, like amazing speeds, but we can't emulate a reality, a universe, the way we seem to be perceiving it. So if this theory is right, then there clearly has to be a much more advanced intelligence behind it. And what that is you know, I think I've actually kind of narrowed down that a little bit just from some of the metaphysical research that goes on, and that's kind of a different area too.
When you think of the possibilities that this intelligence has intertwined all these pieces of this puzzle, they all fit perfectly, Jim. It's an incredible design, isn't it?
It is an incredible design, and when you kind of think about it and think about how it might work, you know, like if, you know, one way to design this could be that everything that happens based on the state of, say, all the particles in the universe, you know, what they are, where they are, and the direction that they're going. And from that, and from, you know, a concrete set of laws of physics, you could calculate what's going to happen at any point in time. But we know from the observer effect, from the things that you and I talked about earlier, that there's another factor here. There's another input to this this process or this programmatic function, and that input is our consciousness, our intent to do things. And that input it's not 100%. It's not very clear cut. It seems to be following some sort of fuzzy logic, if you will, or some probability distribution, like, you know, maybe 53% of the time that somebody intends to do something, you know, it happens, as opposed to 100% of the time. But that 53% is significant because, and I actually picked that number for a reason. There was a recent study by an individual from Cornell University, my alma mater, who determined after 8 years of study that precognition was a real effect, that people could really predict a little bit into the future. And the number that he came up with, the percentage that this happened, was about 53%. And one might look at that and say, oh, well, that's, you know, that's not that much. It's not much more than 50%. But it can be if you perform the experiment enough times. It's kind of like flipping a penny. If I flip a penny 100 times, the odds that it'd be 53 or more is, I don't know, maybe 20, 30%. But if I flip it a million times, the odds that it would be 530,000 or more is almost insignificant.